Curtain up, theater people, and welcome to your program, Mr. Ticket, coming to you from Midtown Manhattan, right in the middle of Broadway. My name is Sean Chandler, and I'll be your host. Your program, Mr. Ticket, is a discussion of smaller theater works and the people and organizations that make it happen. As many of you know, your program is your ticket is a helpful system where your program is literally your ticket to get into the theater in smaller, more intimate productions. It's these works we like to highlight, and it's our goal in this show to feature as many of these productions as possible while still discussing the biggies. I love theater and see as much as I can wherever I go. During the travels of the production of My Husband and My Play at the Flash, I've met many wonderful people from all over the world in the theater community, and it is my honor to bring them on as guests to the show. Tonight's guests are the writing team of Life Jacket Theater's production of America is Hard to See, playwright, director Travis Russ, and composer Priscilla Holbrook. But first up, before I bring them on, and since it's Christmas in a few days, this weekend coming up, I thought it would be nice to mention some of the more popular Christmas songs from musicals. How fun is that? One of the things that I love most about the holidays is that for a few months out of the year, things get different. Settings, food, entertainment, and musical theater does a nice job in holding up its transportative. I hope I'm saying that correctly. I think it's a word. I looked it up anyways. It's transportative end of that deal. And here are a few examples of that. So, some Christmas songs from musicals. Lovers on Christmas Eve from I Love My Wife. Green Willow Christmas from Green Willow. Pine Cones and Holly Berries from Here's Love. Christmas Child from Irm LaDuce. Christmas Day, Promises, Promises. Got another one from Promises, Promises coming up. At Christmas Time, Song of Norway. Snowflakes and Sweethearts from Anya. Be a Santa from Subways Are for Sleeping. 12 Days to Christmas from She Loves Me. That's a fun musical. Hard Candy Christmas from Best Little Whorehouse in Texas. Had to mention that. My husband brought it to my attention because he loves all things Dolly Parton. New Deal for Christmas from Annie, which I love that musical. I think it's so fun. And, of course, We Need a Little Christmas from May. Now, the next two I have some stories about. The first one I'm going to talk about is Turkey Lurkey Time from Promises, Promises. Now, I saw the Promises, Promises revival with Kristen Chenoweth and Sean Hayes. And Turkey Lurkey Time is kind of a really fun, silly number. But my story goes back to when we lived in California. There was a bar in West Hollywood called Eleven, and they have musical Mondays is what they called it. And they would run, you know, just clips of various videos and songs and things like that from musicals, and everyone would go and watch. Well, there was this group of theater students who would come in, and they would lip sync or sing along with all the numbers. And there was this one guy who would do the Turkey Lurkey Time number from, I believe the musical was Camp, and he nailed it. At each and every time, he'd get out there, he'd do the whole entire dance and the whole number, and I just thought that it was really fun to watch, and everybody loved it, everybody requested it, and it got so, like, he was kind of overdoing it after a while. Like, you get up there and, like, act all bored while he's doing this, you know, this number. But anyways, it's super fun, and it's got a lot of energy, and, you know, look that up. It's Promises, Promises is a really cute show, and it's a fun number. So there's my first story. My second story has to do with the song Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas from Meet Me in St. Louis, which I love that movie. I think that movie has charm to spare. And in, at first I thought Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas was like a really super nice, beautiful, cutesy song. I didn't really capture the meaning until I had like a really hard year one year. And I was laying in bed and watching TV, as is one of my favorite activities. And it was on, and all of a sudden I started listening to the song. And I was like, okay, what she's talking about is enjoying your holiday. Put aside all of that crap that you deal with and just enjoy your holiday for what it is. That all that will be there when we're done. And I think that that really plays into what I was saying about having things be different for a little while, having some fun and some charm and festivities take over our lives for a little bit, for a little bit of time to, I don't know, to just make us feel better and make things, you know, better for a little while. So there you go. That's my meaning story as I have it listed here on my script outline. So, you know, I love that musical, and I think that everybody should try and see it, at least watch the movie. But otherwise, check your local arts calendar and see if any of the shows that I did mention are running in your area. Always support your theater community. And if not, it's okay to cheat and rent one of the movies. That's my Christmas present to you. I'm giving you permission to do that. So, there you go. So, Merry Christmas, everyone. Now it's time to switch gears big time and welcome my two esteemed guests. Folks, please welcome to the show the dynamite creative team of Life Jacket Theater's upcoming production of America is Hard to See, Travis Russ and Priscilla Holbrook. Hi, Travis. Hi, Priscilla. And welcome to your program, Is Your Ticket.
Hi, Sean. How's it going?
Thank you.
It's going great. How's it going with you two?
Good. A few days before Christmas. And I loved your list of songs.
Did you?
Yes. What's your favorite one on that list?
I would have to go with Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
That's a good one.
Judy Garland, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it's so sad and poignant and wonderful.
Just lovely.
Shall I do my... No. Okay. Never mind.
Yes. You're a dope. No, you can't. You can't bring it up and not say.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. What's your favorite song?
I just love anything, all things Judy. So
you'd go with the same one?
Well, there are several I don't know, so I'm going to check them out. Promises, Promises is obviously the great song.
The Turkey Lurkey Time?
No, the song Promises, Promises, is that from Promises, Promises?
I believe it is.
I thought it was a Bacharach David song.
It is.
Dionne Warwick.
It is.
Yeah.
They wrote the music for that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But not a Christmas song. Mine's Hard Candy Christmas. I love that. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, you and my husband. Yeah, he read over and he's like, where is Hard Candy Christmas?
I'm surprised it wasn't on your original list.
I know, right? That is a great song. And that's another one of those songs that talks about sort of like putting things aside for a while, mm-hmm. difficulty aside, mm-hmm. and enjoying the holiday.
The dark side of Christmas.
Exactly. You know, when the whorehouse is in danger of being shut down.
Yeah, when things are tough.
When
sure.
things are, exactly, yeah. exactly. Well,
no, I appreciate that list. I'm excited to delve in.
to answer your question, I believe, as far as Promises, Promises goes, when I saw the revival with Sean Hayes and Kristen Chenoweth, mm. I think there were a couple of songs, Bacharach songs that were not in the original that they put in.
Oh,
I'm not sure what they were, but I'm familiar with The House Is Not a Home and Say a Little Prayer. Anyway, so if anybody has the answer to that, you can, you know, like direct message me or something like that on the Facebook page and let everyone know. So there we go. Well, thank you for sharing your favorite Christmas song with me. That's great. And that lovely rendition of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas.
In the archives now.
Indeed. I think that should be its own separate recording.
It really should.
It really should, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell our audience about your new show, America is Hard to See.
Sure. So 3 years ago, I put together a research and development team, and we really wanted to do a project where we lived in a community and collected archival research and interviewed folks and really became enmeshed in that environment. And strangely enough, we stumbled upon a place called Miracle Village, and it's about an hour and a half inland from West Palm Beach, and it sits in the middle of sugarcane fields, and it's this disused village that used to be housing for immigrant workers who would cut all the sugarcane fields by hand. And a few years ago, 75 men moved in there, and they live there because they can't live near bus stops or parks or schools or playgrounds, anywhere where children congregate. And of course, they live there because they're registered sex offenders. They've done either their time in prison or jail. They've gotten out, and because of very strict residency laws in Florida, there's really no place for them to live. And so they found this disused village and decided to make that their new home. And our play follows the stories of several men that we interviewed during our time there. And Priscilla has taken a number of the transcripts and transformed them into original songs. So every lyric that you hear sung was something spoken during those interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else about the show?
Well, yeah, Travis and his team conducted in-depth interviews with scores of people down there, and came back with a mile high of...
like literally of, thousands of pages of transcripts.
Yeah, and so the whole process has been, which we can get into, of course, is kind of a negative space sort of whittling down of all that material. And part of that is the songs. And so it's really, it's amazing to use real verbatim text. And it's because it's so rich. So yeah, we'd go through hundreds of pages and I'd have a pile of stuff from a particular character, i.e. that person, that real person's interview transcripts, and make a song from that. So yeah, we've made these things, but they're the real people.
And I think it's important to stress that the play is not necessarily about the crimes that these guys committed. We certainly tackle that head on, but if I had to sort of summarize what the play's about, it's about their difficult journey moving forward, trying to carve out a new life for themselves and the people they meet along the way. And religion plays a huge role in this production. And it's about the limits of forgiveness and about the role that faith plays in forgiving people.
Who had this idea?
So Life Check, a theater company that I'm the artistic director of, really what we do is we love to stage works that are based on real life, real people, real events, real things that have happened in the world. And I love, to get sort of dorky on it, I love ethnodrama, and I love transforming research into theatrical works. And the research and development team, we were interested in, we landed on two topics, outsiders in small towns and utopias. And I felt like we needed to get a little more granular than that. And I decided to investigate Miracle Village. Like, it just sort of stumbled across my radar. And at first I was like, there's no way I'm doing a play about Miracle Village. But the more I read about it, and I saw a couple of the mini docs that were created about this village and the people who live there and some of the people who lived around it in the nearby communities and their relationship with the guys, they're just such powerful characters and individuals, and their stories are so haunting. There's no way I could say no to doing a play about that particular topic. It just, it really gets under your skin and is really a meaningful, important conversation for us to have, I think, especially in the theatrical space.
Now, you've done quite a few, it looks like, readings at your various, and many of your elements of residency, which is great. What are the audience's reactions to the show? And let's sort of do the reaction before they see the show and then after they see the show. What are they thinking when they go in? And then what are they thinking after they've experienced the project?
You know, it's kind of interesting that people are kind of surprised how complicated the issue is. I think we're sort of conditioned by a number of factors to feel one way or the other about this community.
And
particularly one way.
Yeah.
And I think I call it emotional confusion. In fact, I experienced it when I went down and I lived near the village and met these people and interviewed them and even became friends with them. And I was surprised that I became friends with some of these guys. Mm-hmm. And so my goal, if I had a particular goal as a playwright and director, is for the audience to have the same sort of experience that I had in terms of having many different feelings about the stories that they're hearing. And again, really leaning into that confusion.
Yeah. And so far, that's kind of what's happened, I think. I mean, in the development process, we've had we've staged little snippets of things, just maybe a 20-minute thing for a, at the end of a residency where we were working for a little while or something like that. We've only just had our first, well, we've had full readings of scripts along the way, but again, as I said before, it's such a whittling down process. You're constantly saying goodbye to parts of the story that really are so rich, but we have to decide what is the story that we want to tell and what's the script that you want to write. And so in these snippets along the way, there's been a really very, I would call it an alive reaction to the material. People are not, and this is really important to us, people are not shutting down and going, I don't want to have anything to do with this. Or I don't know, it's that confusion thing. I think people are moved by the complexity of it. And what I think is that we have all, every single darn one of us, have had some experience with, whether it's inappropriate or fully criminal sexual violation, you know, whether it's ourselves personally or people close to us or just touched by the, you know, what's going on in the world and not having blinders on. So really, it's kind of a topic for everyone in a sense. And I feel like, as you said, the conversation needs to go there. Mm-hmm. And rather than being it's really easy to just say, it's horrible and I don't want to talk about it. We want to say it's horrible and there's a lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. And to make a play that makes people feel things and maybe empathize with people who they might not have gotten to know, you know, just see kind of the gray areas. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the emotions range from anger to sadness and even empathy. And our goal was to actually cover that full range of emotions, because that means we're having a complicated, complex conversation with the audience.
Hmm. Now, when you were doing your interviews, your research, did you give yourself any, for lack of a better word, any rules or standards that you would follow?
Really, our goal is to, because it's research driven, we wanted to tell the true stories that we were hearing. And I know Priscilla gave herself the rule of only using text that was pulled from the transcripts. Mm-hmm. And in terms of a playwright, I really try to be as disciplined as possible in not inventing any storylines and not mm-hmm. crafting any fictitious events that didn't actually occur. Of course, because we're trying to make it a cogent, compelling theatrical experience, we're moving some things around in terms of the timeline. But really, we wanted to honor the stories that we captured during our time in Florida.
Wow. That's great. It's a very daring thing that you're doing here. It's very, very brave. I absolutely, totally respect you as artists for going in and taking this unflinching look at a segment of society that so many people are afraid to look at. And I love the title of the musical, because what you're doing is saying this is probably the most difficult thing to see for anybody, and I think any citizen of the world. It's some of the things that we hear about are difficult and heinous, and for you to take this on, I think it's I got mad respect for you. I really, really do. Now, you also interviewed and worked with not just people who were registered sex offenders, but other people who deal with the town as well, right? Yeah. So talk about that a little bit.
Sure. So we interviewed folks who lived in this village, and we also interviewed folks who I think many of them stumbled upon having connections with the folks who live there, including a pastor who this was her new pastorship in a nearby town, and she heard about this village and decided to go there. To meet some of the guys and ended up inviting them back to her church. Didn't entirely tell her congregation that she was inviting these guys into her church. And of course, there were some problems that play into the theatrical narrative of our play.
That's a major conflict.
Major conflict.
Yeah.
Big time.
that is at the center, or the crux of our show. We also interviewed a number of drama therapists and other therapists who work with this population to provide a counterbalance to, and to provide an analytical voice as to how should the audience watch the show? How should they interpret these stories? Because we are totally aware that the stories that are being told on the stage are from the voices of these men. And that is one truth. And there are many truths out there. We interviewed a number of people so that the audience is hearing a number of voices in the show.
Yeah, and the fact is that the cast is three men and three women. Mm-hmm. So they're, with playing multiple roles mm-hmm. as well. So
they step in and out of character. Yeah. They speak directly to the audience. It's not a play where it's monologue, monologue, monologue. It actually has a narrative. Scenes unfold in real time. And it's funny, we were debating whether to call it a musical or a play with music, and we landed on a play with music. Priscilla, do you want to articulate why?
Well, I mean, it's sort of a pedantic distinction, I guess, but in some ways. But there's something about this material and this treatment of the material that requires an approach that is, well, certainly not bells and whistles, you know? It's not musical number. Now, you know, it's just,
there are no jazz hands.
There are no tap shoes. And it was important to me. It wasn't even important to me. It was never a question for me that the music be really integrated, in the story, that it's not a, let's stop and have a song now. It's let me tell my story musically now. Or, that's one device that's used. But it's pretty seamless, and that feels right for this material. It's very stark. The production is very bare bones in a lot of ways, and intimate. It's an intimate evening of theater in the sense that you are just right up there seeing real people, you know, played by actors. In a context that's very naked in the sense of people's hearts are on their sleeves, and the music has to be it has to let you in, not sing at you, if that makes any mm-hmm. sense. And when Travis approached me about doing music for this, you know, I've done a lot of experimental theater and a lot of, you know, very interesting stuff over the years where it wasn't like, what? But it was, wow, you know? And the reason I jumped at the chance was because of my feeling that music is kind of the unifying thing everywhere. You know, it's just the immediate heart opener in a sense. It's when, if you are trying to convey the humanity or the complexity of anything, if it's delivered musically, it's like kind of a shortcut. You kind of clear away all the stuff around it. So I feel like the play with music kind of says that, in the sense that it's you know, it's not songs over, now let's clap. It's I'm part of this. I'm part of this in the audience, and it happens to be sung right now, and it's spoken right now. Oh, and now it's sung again, and now two people are singing together, and now there's a group or whatever. So it's sort of a piece.
And in terms of the style, Priscilla has written some beautiful music that ranges from folk / indie to very traditional Methodist hymns that she's reorchestrated.
I saw that.
Just beautiful, beautiful work. And what I love about the musical moments in the show is it's almost like if you think of a cinematic close-up, I think that's the theatrical equivalent of a song, that you really get to sort of peek mm-hmm. into an actor or a character's psyche and have a true direct connection to their story.
It's kind of a fast track.
It's a fast track. And it's really hard to despise someone when they're singing to you because they're showing you their heart. And we heard that in so many of the stories that we captured during our time in Florida. And we wanted to have the audience have that same experience. It's like putting poetry onto their lives. And we really wanted to bring that to the stage. And just as much as we're showing the lightness of these stories through song, we're also showing the darkness and the bleakness of humanity and what terrible things we do to other human beings. But to me, what I find interesting about this topic is there's beauty in these people and there's also a great sadness and darkness. And it's important for me to capture both parts on stage.
Well, you're both of you as the writers are responsible for respecting the tone of the piece. So you have to make certain decisions based on that, which it sounds like that's what you're doing. So that's terrific. Also, I think I totally agree with you. They say when you can't talk anymore in a musical piece of theater, you sing. And it does allow the audience to sort of watch the proverbial head of the character crack open and see inside of it. That's terrific. How are your actors responding to the characters that they're needing to play? Now, my husband is an actor, and he always says the first rule of thumb for him is not to judge a character. Mm-hmm. Did they struggle with that a little bit?
I think we went through that in terms of the casting process, finding actors who were open to exploring this topic. And so we were very transparent about what the show was about and the fact that they would be playing multiple characters and who they would be playing and that they would be doing direct address. We also had to find actors who could sing, who could play their own instruments, and we forgot to mention that a lot of the main reason why we have music in the show is because a lot of the real people who are portrayed in the show are actually musicians, and that actually is a major turning point of the plot. And so there's a narrative rationale for why we have the actors suddenly turn to singing.
Yeah, and the whole church thing of choirs. There's mm-hmm. the whole issue of the different the choir in this village and that village and mm-hmm. their interaction with each other. So
because yeah, a lot of the characters are members of this choir.
Exactly. So music is integral to the, as you say, the narrative mm-hmm. as well. Yeah.
It's been really fascinating to watch these actors step into playing these real people, and sometimes they've had the chance to actually meet the real people. And seeing that dynamics, it suddenly becomes very meta. A lot of actors are really hungry for a great part, and these are great parts where they're able to show the full range of humanity. Mm. I was a little concerned, to be honest with you, as the director and the playwright, that I was a little worried about the what impact might it have on actors and whether they would judge these people. But we've been doing it for a long time in terms of telling dark stories on a stage. I mean, we go back to Medea, to Oedipus. Really, I mean, we go back to Greek tragedy where they were putting the darkness of humanity on stage to teach the audience a lesson. Now, I don't know if we're interested in teaching the audience a lesson. We're interested in reflecting humanity back to the audience, which perhaps that was the goal of those playwrights. Mm-hmm. But actors, they really good ones. And we're very fortunate to have this amazing cast. They're both incredible actors and incredible singers and incredible musicians.
And just terrific people, every mm-hmm. single one. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they've embraced this process, and they're embracing it.
And I think what's helped is the fact that we've created this community of actors because they're representing a community. So we don't treat it as a cast. We treat it as an ensemble. Mm-hmm. And the fact, I think that music also helps. Music is therapy. And so just as much as it's hard for the audience to judge the characters when they sing, it's really hard for the actors to judge the characters that they're playing when they sing.
That's strong writing.
I can't really take credit for it because it's all based on transcripts.
It's their words.
Which perhaps also plays a role.
They're so humble, these two. I love
Well, it's an interesting, you know, it's you really are off the hook in a certain way when you don't, you're not coming up with the stuff. You're just going through with a highlighter, you know, and trying to sort of maintain the gist and the sort of through line of what a conversation was. But you get to go in with a highlighter and just.
But you've put together a narrative out of stacks and stacks of documents.
Yeah.
And you, as the composer, have written original songs and music, and you've also reworked some Methodist hymns as well from what you were talking about. Now, did you take and rework Methodist hymns and give them new compositions, or have you written something new along the lines of that?
Yeah, well, we delved into a lot of that sort of material. In the end, there are just a few snippets. I would say percentage-wise, it's not a huge amount of that stuff, but it comes at important times. And
in terms of the Methodist hymns?
Yes, in terms of the hymns. So most of the music in the play is original. With the hymns... and then there's one original... There's one sort of crossover that is an original song that... to me, is sort of my take on, I don't know, contemporary spiritual. So there's one song that is sort of kind of a hybrid of, it could be sung in a Methodist church, but it's actually, I wrote it, based on the text.
It's funny, somebody who has a background in religious music came to see an excerpt of the show, and she thought it was a traditional hymn.
Oh, cool.
So you fooled her.
Excellent.
Yes.
Excellent.
Did you not know that?
No. No, that's mm-hmm. that's great. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing to hear.
I'm a big genre freak. I love the formulaic quality of different genres and tapping into that in a way that is not sort of just throwing out a bunch of cliches, but acknowledging that we have traditions in music and in pop music. And stuff, and so that's a huge part of my inspiration for, you know, Travis mentioned there are sort of several different kind of subgenres of what this is, and that was really determined by the words, by who I was writing for, and so there is a slightly different feel to some of the music as we go along, but hopefully it feels sort of integrated with that character and what would be their sort of subgenre in a sense. And that wasn't something I thought about ahead of time. Oh, I'm going to write a country song for that. Oh, I'm going to write a gospel song for that person. It just kind of happened, and then we've had a nice long process to really hone decisions like that and sort of tweak things. But one interesting side note about the... which I think is a lovely, lovely meta thing about the music, is that one fantastic Methodist hymn, I had a chance to work with one of the real people, in, quote, real people, so one of the guys in the story.
One of your subjects.
Yeah, yeah.
Who has a background in religious music.
Yeah, and it started with hey, can you direct us to some wonderful Methodist hymns? Because I'm not familiar with that tradition as much as I am, and more of an Anglican and sort of older church music tradition. So that was a little bit of a new territory for me. So we asked this gentleman... If he could help us there. Well, that grew into a little mini collaboration, which has been really wonderful. And this one piece of music is the only piece of music that is not totally my arrangement. It's his arrangement.
Wow.
So there's a little snippet of a hymn that is actually arranged just hauntingly mm-hmm. by a real person.
It sounds like, from what you're telling me, that the music is used to bring in grace and hope in the piece. And again, I'm just making guesses at, based upon what I've read and what you're telling me, which I think is great. I personally think that tragedy without hope and grace isn't effective, and can honestly, in my opinion, make me tune out and make me get bored.
Right.
So that's great. And
sorry, if I can interject on, sure. on that note.
Absolutely.
It actually circles back to your previous question about, did the actors judge these characters as they were playing them? And the moments where I picked up on the actors judging these characters is when they tried to sort of, we call it, Priscilla and I call it playing the pain of the moment, where they would impress upon their story, these character stories, a sense of pain and sadness. And actually, as human beings, we rarely sit in sadness. I mean, there are certainly moments, but we can't live in sadness because there's just, it's actually not interesting to watch, and it isn't a good survival tactic. We actually have to pull ourselves out of it. In fact, we work against sadness. Nobody wants to be sad.
We spend a lot of time and effort and money to not deal with sadness.
Mm-hmm. And so those moments where I noticed the actors were playing sadness, I asked them if they were judging the character, if they were projecting that the character is sad about that, or are they trying to push themselves out of the sadness, if they're trying to find joy and happiness and forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And that's a much more interesting thing to play on the mm-hmm. stage, and perhaps more realistic and accurate of what these real people are going through. So I think if there's any judgment going on in terms of the actors, it's very subtle. And so those have been some interesting moments.
Have you tried to take it to a stripped down place with the actors and with the music, to where they're dealing with it technically, so that they don't necessarily get caught up in their own personal feelings? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm explaining that correctly. Sometimes when you're working with actors, I think you take it down to just the minimum of decisions that they should be participating in. And in doing that, I think that it gets them out of their head, and gets them into the head of the character. Is that a technique that you're using, or am I way off base?
Well, there's so much work to do, really, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's you know, when I'm going into, I'm like, I've got to just work these songs with people and make musical choices. There's too much work to do on the play to really stop and, you know,
and judge.
Stop and have tea, you
right.
know, about, you know, sure, we're not skimming over the deep stuff, but the deep stuff is just there. You know,
there's no escaping it.
It's just there.
And in fact, the less time you actually sit in the darkness is actually really helpful. Just to keep moving and keep pushing the story forward, we find that pace and energy and forward momentum is actually really helpful in this type of work, rather than sit and wallow in it.
Right.
Playing against the pain is actually more exciting for both the actors and the audience than it is to sit in the somber place.
Yeah, and these are mature artists who understand that they need to go there. They're right. all going there, so to speak.
And we have moments of darkness where they have to go there.
Yeah,
and it's beautiful when we, and heartbreaking and haunting and disturbing when they actually go there.
Yeah, when that space is created in the story, in the script. But I mean, the rest of the time, that is with them, you know, that darkness, that complexity is with everybody the whole time, because they're mature artists. They know that they're playing through, you know, it's three dimensional. But as I said, there's just a lot of artistic work to do. So, you know, there's
There's always a list of technical points.
Totally. You want to make it a good piece of theater. That's really what Travis and I are all about, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's we just want to make an amazing piece of theater that is enlivening, let's put it that way, to an audience.
Yeah, and is honest and is truthful and is compelling and reflects the stories that we heard. And we're not journalists. Even though we do work that is based on real events, we're not interested in just reporting the facts. We're interested in unpacking the truth and the multiple truths of the story. And that darkness is there. It's like a shadow. It casts itself over everything. And in order to craft a compelling piece of art, we've got to find the joy. I love that Nietzsche quote of the brighter the light, the darker the shadow. And that's really sort of the ethos of the piece that we're creating.
Well, I can't wait to see it.
I hope you do.
I will, of course. Yes, I am absolutely, completely intrigued. Like I said before, I got mad respect for you for doing this.
Thanks.
On your program Is Your Ticket, I also like to talk to our artists about their feelings about theater overall and in general.
Great, so let's chat.
Are you willing to indulge me a little bit on that?
Absolutely.
Okay, alrighty. Are there any particular messages and themes that speak strongly to you in the projects you select to write, direct, produce, compose?
I love honest works. I love challenging works. I love smart works. I love theater pieces that aren't afraid to go faster than I can think. And that really don't talk down to an audience. That's what I love about theater.
Okay.
Yeah, the stuff that I'm attracted to, like as a consumer and as a creator, are, I love smart and interesting text. I really appreciate great writing, and for me, text in this day and age of theater, text is just one part of the equation. I like theater that is theatrical, let's put it that way. That it's not just if it could have been on TV, I'm not interested in seeing it. I want to use the live immediacy and the theatricality and the if something is too linear, I don't really have time for it. There's too much interesting, groundbreaking stuff going on that uses music, movement, scenic elements, dance, light, skips in time, all over the stage, all over the theater. Let's go outside for a scene. There's just, theater's wide open right now. So I like to see things that take all of those elements and judge them as equal parts. So theater that's created that says, you know what, there's a play that's been written, but that's only like one fifth of the story. Now we as an ensemble are going to create the play.
Now, harking back to Turkey Lurkey time.
It always goes back
to Turkey Lurkey. Now, do you both have like a guilty pleasure?
Oh.
Because I'll start. Yeah. I love Legally Blonde. I can watch Legally Blonde, the musical.
The musical? Wow. I just saw it for the first time.
Over and over again. It's I love it. And Waitress. I mean, I have actually the theater tastes of probably a 12-year-old girl, but that's just me.
No, that's great. And I mean, who doesn't love a big, bold Broadway musical? I mean, of course, I love to indulge in that.
Oh yeah, and you mentioned She Loves Me, and I'll never forget. Although I forget where, I'll never forget the production about, I don't know, at the Roundabout like 15 years ago of She Loves Me. It was amazing. It was just, it was everything that.
And they just redid it. They redid it.
That very production?
I think it was pretty close to it.
I didn't see it 15 years ago, but I saw the most current production at Studio 54 with Laura Benanti. It was really, really good. And I just, if I may fangirl a little bit, because I fangirl big time. But my friend Ellen Margulies, she's a theater buddy of mine, invited me to see to one of the Seth speaks, the Seth Rudetsky shows that he tapes. Sheldon Harnick was there.
Oh my gosh.
You know, the composer from She Loves Me. Mm-hmm. He was one of the most charming.
Oh, nice.
I mean, bow tie, dressed up, charmed everybody. Yeah.
No, there's nothing like the great musicals. I mean, Guys and Dolls, Pajama Game, you know, God, don't get me started. I'm a big fan. Yeah, love it, love it, love it. And, you know, South Pacific, the whole deal, but from a new sensibility. Not let's stage it in a garbage truck. No, let's do it the way it was done, but let's do it with the real immediacy and the aliveness that theater is bringing to the old traditional stuff now. That's exciting.
Bring some new guard to the old guard.
Right on.
There you go. Okay, cool. On that note, what do you think is an important direction theater is taking right now?
I think the fact that we're seeing more serious... I mean, it's a nice balance. The fact that we're seeing more serious theater on Broadway. I mean, it's great to have those brassy musicals. We need that. But it's kind of amazing that we're getting shows like Fun Home and The Band's Visit to... I think we need to be grounded a little bit as human beings. We're really hungry for works that tell us a story that's perhaps a little bit dark and perhaps a little bit more complicated on a Broadway stage. And the fact that those shows can survive alongside those other more traditional shows or commercial shows, that's what I'm excited about. And the fact that they have good, healthy runs. The fact that there is an audience
for them. Yeah, that's encouraging, isn't it? Yeah.
Indeed.
So,
well, it pains me that people think we need to make and this is disclaimer. I haven't seen any of them, so there's probably some great work being done, but making the musical version of a movie seems to be happening a lot. And taking a person's work, although I'm dying to see the Bruce Springsteen show, taking a person's work and making a show out of it. And I love Carole King, you know, so, I mean, there's exceptions to all of this, but there are new original things being written. And I wish we didn't, on a commercial level, have to rehash so much, 'cause there's new stories being told. And that doesn't mean that tried and true material, like a whole bunch of Billy Joel songs or a whole bunch of Queen songs or whatever, don't deserve to be on Broadway. They do. But let's sort of think outside the box of how to do all that, I guess, is part of it. So that's the negative side. The other side is what I was saying before. Let's just see remounts of all the great musicals. I would much rather have you know, Oklahoma again, South Pacific again, and Guys and Dolls again, you know, then, you know, feeling like we need to make a musical of a movie that should have just been a movie. Yeah, and then on the sort of smaller...
Besides
Legally Blonde. Sorry. You're right. And I saw that, I saw an amateur production in like 2 hours outside of London that was so incredible a couple months ago. So there you go. It was amazing, actually.
You don't have to pretend to like it.
I loved
just
it.
Just because I'm sitting here and I'm pouring my heart out to you. No, it actually has a really good narrative.
It totally does. And it's a great role for abroad and for several, actually. Yeah, no, that's a good one. Yeah, but on the sort of program is your ticket side of things, I guess I would just say that I'm really happy that there's nothing that people aren't trying right now. You know, it seems like theater is so wide open in terms of form and content and styles of execution and everything else. And as we evolve in that direction of anything goes, if I may, the virtuosity keeps rising, that that we don't lose the sort of rigor, the craftsmanship and rigor around all of that. And I think that's happening. You know, when performance art was in the early days, you know, 80s, 90s and stuff of what you were seeing around town, it was just, you know, new and wonderful. But now people are going, okay, we need to execute with precision and artistry and all of that. So I feel like we're going in that direction, which I'm really excited about as well.
Terrific answers. And I feel like I should ring a bell because you were the first person on my show to actually say the title of my show, which I love that. I feel like it should be like ding, 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 ding. No. What most people answer with that question, because I ask all my interviews that, is that there needs to be a balance. There needs to be the fun theater, and there needs to be, I'm just speaking very broadly, the fun theater, the big musicals, the ones that make us happy. And then there needs to be some experimentation, and there needs to be some risk. And it's really nice when they both meet. Mm. Rare, but it's it is nice when that occurs. Mm. What do you think is the best part of being involved with smaller productions?
I love it because you get to really intimately work with a group of people, and you get to have true collaboration where you're creating this entity together, and the silos break down a lot more when it's on a smaller scale and it's a smaller group of people.
Explain that phrase to me. I've never heard that.
Well, instead of being, let's use the example with Priscilla and myself. Priscilla isn't bashful about giving me comments about the structure of a scene or the structure of a monologue or whether a character belongs in the show. And likewise, Priscilla has been so generous about sharing with me earlier drafts of songs. And I would, as a listener, provide feedback to her about where I was most engaged in a song. And both the script and the music have evolved together in tandem. And I think that's created a stronger piece. So it's instead of the script being its own entity in its own little silo and the music being in its own little silo, they actually live together. And it's actually really exciting that the character in the show can go from spoken text right into song, and it's a natural extension rather than having a break between speech and music.
Yeah, and also sometimes with smaller things that don't fall under the sort of rules of, well, you know, because you're just having to do them whenever you can and stuff, sometimes you have a longer process. We have had the luxury, well, not the luxury, we've had, it's been a necessity of a good long development process with this. But with other works that I've done that are a lot more kind of, no budget experimental works with colleagues that I just love and, you know, and we work together and there's the camaraderie and there's the collaboration and there's the, like, you know what, let's work on this part of the play and now let's, like, shoot a bunch of weird little videos that we think might go in this other part of the play. And it's not on this, you know, commercial budget, sort of
like a trap.
Driven.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is, so the pressure of all of that stuff is a great pressure to be under. It's great to, you know, be sort of in that kind of part of the theater world. But when you're working in sort of smaller kind of from the ground up situations, there's a lot of wonderful things that really happen where the development process is super organic and where you can really do truly devised work. People tell me, oh, it's a devised play. Yeah, we work together for 3 weeks, 4 weeks. It's like, that's, you know, you just don't, it's not, that's apples and oranges, you know. So you need, you need that time and you need that camaraderie and you need that, okay, we have zero budget, but we want to do this, you know? And that's to me what, you know, most theater people have in common. It's just like, you know, most, not all, but most odds are against you, you know? So you're just like, we're not into this for the, you know? So it's that team spirit. It's just, it's really there in small stuff, and you know that you have to collaborate with your team. And that's the fun part.
Yeah, and I like to keep my rooms very small, the number of people sitting around the table very small, because you can have a deeper, richer, more complicated conversation. And that people, I try to find people to put around that table who aren't territorial, who aren't bashful about sharing their perspectives and their insights about different elements of the production. And from the audience's perspective, you see that. You see when the team, both on stage and off, if they're working together or not.
Mm. Yeah, that's so true. It's like to have one voice, you have to really have all the voices. Mm-hmm. To wind up with a unified...
Wait, say that one more
time. Okay, work that right up. I mean, I'll have a quote here in a minute. That if you want a unified, you know, signal, let's say, it's like a radio signal. If your play is... If you want it to be a unified and clear signal... dramaturgically, artistically, aesthetically, on every level, you need in the process for every person to be fully themselves, you know, and not saying, oh, well, you're the director, you know better, or you're the playwright, I'm not going to say that thing I kind of want to say, or whatever. So if every department, let's say, is not ego invested in, don't tell me what to do, you know, if everyone is like not precious and can say, sure, you know, Travis is like, I'm not a music person, but, you know, I'm like, it doesn't matter what I want to know what we all feel this play needs. What serves the play is the phrase that a lot of people use, and that's really what you got to do. You got to serve the play. You don't serve, oh, but I really like this song that I made. We've got to find a place in the play for it.
I know.
You know, it's just like, no, that just doesn't work. But so you have to not be precious, and you have to be fully yourself and fully able to get behind your convictions along the way and receive feedback along the way is just extremely important so that you can have that unified vision in the end.
The play has to have the ego, not the writer.
That's exactly. So true. Exactly. Well put.
Thank you. To have one voice, you have to have all the voices. I wrote it down.
Okay. Good.
I love that. That's terrific.
Priscilla Holbrook. Right. Copyright 2000.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Maybe there's some money in
there. Let's go register that as a trademark. No, that's terrific. Now, before I ask you if there's anything else that you're working on, because, you know, you have all this time with, you know, putting up your show next month. Exactly. And to give your social media information, do you want to do a speed round with me?
Sure.
Okay. All righty. Tipped you off a little bit in your script outline here. So, are you ready?
Okay.
Okay, what's your favorite play?
I love Angels in America.
Oh, my gosh.
It will be a classic. It is a classic.
Coming back.
Can't wait. Yeah. Did you see it at the National Theater live?
No. I'm waiting to see it actually live.
Do you like that? Do you like... I know we're slowing down the speed round.
I didn't prepare.
Oh, no.
There's just too many. It's hard for me. I'm always bad at what's your favorite, what's the best, but I'm going to say... Macbeth.
Oh, wow.
Guys and Dolls.
That's the next one.
Yes.
Yeah. So Macbeth.
Okay.
Okay, favorite musical?
Cabaret.
I love Cabaret. I can't...
Well, you mentioned Guys and Dolls.
Yeah, well, I love Guys and Dolls. Okay, right. Guys and Dolls.
Guys and Dolls? Okay, cool. Favorite writer?
Playwright, you mean, or...?
Preferably playwright, or some in the theater, or it could be an entertainment.
Okay,
Or a novelist, if you want.
I'm reading Zadie Smith right now, so I'm just crazy about her. I hope... Yeah. Anyway, she writes characters like playwrights should, so.
I'm going to go with Thornton Wilder.
Okay.
Classic. And again, classic.
Yeah.
Our town. And don't you have a quote on your website?
Yes. Yeah, this play definitely is grounded in the tradition of Wilder's aesthetic.
I wish to record a village's life on the stage with realism and generality. Lord, that's wow. on their website, you guys. Yeah. That's mm-hmm. great. Terrific. Mm-hmm.
That's our
goal. Okay, so are you going to go with Zadie Smith? Or
well,
are
you going to...
If you think of something within the next two questions...
Okay, thank you.
Okay, there
thank
you.
You.
Director? Favorite director?
If we stick with theater, I'm really intrigued with David Cromer's work.
Oh, I love David Cromer. Mm-hmm. And a nice guy, too. Did you see his Our Town, speaking of Our Town?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, my God.
Thrilling.
My husband, David, would not stop talking about it forever. And the band's visit is amazing. Okay, now I'm gonna buy you some time.
Okay.
That man has the ability to, like, take a giant scene and pick, like, 10 to 15 decisions and highlight them and make it work.
Mm-hmm.
Mad respect for David Cromer. And we met him after Our Town. He was really super nice, too.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, I love what I've seen of Ivo Van Hove's work. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm sorry, whose work?
Ivo Van Hove's. Am I saying his name right?
I think so.
Cries and Whispers. Yeah. And, oh my God, a lot of wonderful things I've seen. And his videographer, Tal Yarden, is amazing. So, yeah, anyway.
Excellent. Yeah. Now, do either of you have a mentor?
In the theater.
It could just be a regular. Sure.
Moises Kaufman has been a tremendous influence.
Ruby?
Too many to mention. I come up through as a performer, so I've had some wonderful acting teachers and music teachers along the way. Yep. Travis is my mentor right now.
If only that were true.
I know. That was the right answer, right? Okay, is there anything new that either of you or both of you are working on above and beyond America's Hard to See that you want to talk about?
Really, this is the main entree for right now, but the Life Jacket has a new show actually currently in development. We're excited to announce in the next few months.
But you can't talk about it, right?
We can't talk about it.
That happens all the time on the show. Don't worry. Don't feel bad about that. There's a lot more people will talk about it, and then they'll hear the first take of the show. They'll be like, you need to take that out. We haven't announced it yet. So I completely respect and honor that.
Well, I have a music project that is always on the go with my collaborator, Britt Till. We did an album called Growing Wild, and under the name Susan Jane, that was our band name. We're working on a new project right now that is in development under a new name, forthcoming next year. So that's just straight up music. And then I have my ladies that I do my crazy, no-budget, experimental music theater stuff with, and that's been on hold for a long time. And again, that's sort of when and as we have time and stuff. So we're doing a play called The Turtle Pond Was a Fail by Cara Scarmack, and she's my chief collaborator in that world, and that'll be in the next year or two. So yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're busy.
Well,
you're both creatively busy, and that's so incredible. That's so cool.
Well, this is definitely the main dish right now.
Right.
And
well, when you're opening, what, next month?
Yeah, exactly. And we're just super excited about this moment in the process, because there have been so many along the way. And now we get to do what you want to do, go into rehearsals and do the play.
Yeah. Oh,
so we're really ecstatic.
It becomes surreal, doesn't it? I've often told David when we're doing At the Flash, I'm like, there's a play in here somewhere. You know what I mean? It's like you spend so much time rehearsing and marketing and producing the play. It's like eventually there's an hour and a half show that we're going to do here. So, okay. Now give our audiences all of your social media information, or if you have like one website or page that you can send everybody to that connects with everything else, that's actually
sure
good as well.
Yeah, you can find out more about the company and America's Hard to See at lifejackettheater.org. And theater is spelled with an R-E.
Thank you.
And you can follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at lifejacketnyc.
Excellent. Anything else?
I think that's it.
Do you have a website or social media for your band?
Nope.
No?
But if you go on...
But we're on Spotify.
Yeah. Susan Jane is the name.
Yeah, Susan Jane is the band name, and Growing Wild is our album.
It's a good album.
Thank you.
It's really good.
Excellent. I can't wait to listen to it.
Cool.
Groovy. Well, you two have been wonderful. What a great interview.
Thanks for a great conversation.
Oh, wow. It's my pleasure entirely. And I'm very, very intrigued by America is Hard to See. And I'm really excited to be able to be seeing it myself. So thank you again for being on your program. It's your ticket.
Thank you.
You're amazing.
Thank you.
My pleasure as well. At the end of each show, I like to give shout outs to current productions worth a recommendation. On tonight's episode, I'm actually going to recommend a Broadway play, and I have a reason for doing this. It's Manhattan Theater Club's current production of The Children, written by Lucy Kirkwood and directed by James McDonald, and it's now playing in New York City at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. I really love that theater. It's so spacious. I love it. Here's a little description of the current production taken from Manhattan Theater Club's website. Direct from an acclaimed run in London, the powerful Royal Court Theatre production of Lucy Kirkwood's astonishing new play is making its American debut at MTC with the heralded original cast. In a remote cottage on the lonely British coast, a couple of retired nuclear engineers are living a very quiet life. Outside, the world is in utter chaos following a devastating series of events. When an old friend turns up at their door, they're shocked to discover the real reason for her visit. Now, I don't want to give too much away because the plot continually surprises, and I thought that that was really cool. It's a great show, and I'm not going to talk too much more about the plot. The actors, again, the original London cast, are all amazingly raw yet confident. I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I love when... I want my actors on stage to be confident even when they're supposed to be vulnerable. It makes me feel more comfortable watching the show. The direction subtly lines up to the themes of the piece in a way that really snuck up on me. I was thinking about the show and the way that the director directed it, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's lining up with the narrative of the show. Writing is masterful, especially in its narrative build, and the technical elements are outstanding. Bitchin' set. Love the set. Now, I know a lot of people will be visiting New York over the next few weeks due to the holidays with the intention of seeing theater. I also know most travelers have their show rosters planned out in advance, but if you have an open slot, like say you can't get tickets to one of your options, and tickets are hard to get right now for everything, it feels like, or maybe have some extra time for theater, I'd highly recommend seeing this play. I always tell everybody, when you're out here on a trip, go see at least one play and try to make it off-Broadway if you can. This one's on Broadway, so I'm breaking my own rule here. But anyways, once again, it's playing here in New York City at the Samuel J. Friedman Theater. You can visit Manhattan Theater Club, that's theater with an R-E, .com for tickets and information. Again, theater with an R-E. Well, folks, the proverbial 11 o'clock number has been sung and the bows have been taken, so it's time to lower the curtain. I'd like to thank my guests, the sensational Travis Russ and Priscilla Holbrook. Thank you again.
You're welcome.
You guys are so cool. You can find more episodes of Your Program Is Your Ticket at facebook.com. Your Program Is Your Ticket. I'm on Twitter at Program Ticket. The website is yourprogramisyourticket.com. How much sense does that make? I'm on iTunes and SoundCloud. Rate me, write me a review, subscribe, all that stuff just raises my profile, and that's wonderful when that happens. So there you go. Folks, take a little time to see a show this week, and don't forget to give a smaller show some love. There's a lot of great theater gems out there. Until our next show, good night, theater people, and Kurt.